Today is Thursday, October 27th, 2016. This is an interview with George F. Banda, interviewing Anthony J. Chavez, who served with the United States Army, 24th Division Hawaiian, and also 3 months in the Red Arrow Division. His military occupation was infantry, artillery, heavy weapons, and signal corps. The interview is being conducted at his residence, 6190 South Creekside, unit number 5 in Cudahy. And again, my name is George F. Banda, and recording for the Wisconsin Veterans Museum Oral History Program. So, Tony, let's begin with your story. Where were you born?
In Milwaukee.
Oh, in Milwaukee?
Yeah.
And did you grow up then on the south side of Milwaukee or on the north side of Milwaukee?
When we first lived, I lived in Bayview on Burrell Street. And we had, in the family, there was 5 boys and 3 girls. 2 of the girls have passed away. And my youngest sister, she's still living, and she's going to be 80 this Friday. So they're having a little get-together for us at their daughter's place. And we're all planning on attending.
Good, good.
And wish her well.
Absolutely. Now, what schools did you go to when you were a young man?
We were living on Austin Street in Bayview. And we used to go to St. Augustine's. Now, that was there until I was in about 6th grade. Then, lo and behold, they must have sold the house. And we moved down to the 3rd Ward. And from the 3rd Ward, I went to Jackson Street School. But then I transferred to St. John's Cathedral. And I graduated grade school from St. John's Cathedral. And from there,
high school?
Yeah, I went to high school. I tried boys tech. I didn't like boys tech that much. And I went to Lincoln High School. And at that time, we lived on Jackson Street, 1602 North Jackson Street. And I stayed there till my senior year. Then I got drafted. And I went into the Army and sent me to Fort Sheridan. And from Fort Sheridan, they assigned me to Camp Robinson, Arkansas. I took all my basic training at Camp Robinson. And while I was there, they had a program, it was a volunteer program, that if you want to go through this particular program and you passed it, you were awarded $50 extra a month. And they called it the Expert Infantryman's Badge, which I did. Mm-hmm. And most of this money was going to my mother and my dad. And then from there, I came home and for leave. And then from here, I went to if I can recall, I went to California.
And what year was this, Tony? Remember? What year was that you went into the service? Did you get drafted and you went into the service? You remember what year that was?
1945. Yeah. But then I went down to army camp in California, and I stayed there for a while. Then they shipped me up to Fort Lawton, Washington, for some more training, and at that time we were guarding German prisoners.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and German prisoners were doing all the work around the base, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then from there, they finally got me into a group, and I went overseas. And there's a lot of things that happened while I was in the boat.
What happened?
Oh.
So you went over on a ship then?
On a ship, yes. Yeah.
And that was, what, 1940, 1945?
Yeah. And some accidents happened. A soldier, you know, if you're familiar with the boat itself, it's a Liberty ship. And when you go in, there's a door. You got to step over and land on some kind of a platform or something. And it so happened that this incident, I remember very vividly, because a soldier fell, and he fell down two or three floors. And he got hurt badly. So they radioed for help to move him out of there and get him to the stateside for treatment.
Yeah.
And they sent the seaplane out there. I could see all this that was going on. And it was so windy and treacherous, the water, that they couldn't do the transfer from the ship to the plane. So then another ship came along, and they strung a boy from our Liberty ship to theirs, and they transferred them that way. So that was a sort of traumatic experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, man.
And then we finally got over in the Japan area, and I found out we were going to Japan, and they were getting ready to make the invasion of Japan. And it never happened because of the atomic bomb and all that.
How did you guys find out about the atomic bomb, or did they let you know, or they just said, oh, we're not going to go?
Yeah, they had a ship paper. They kept us informed about what was going on. So we didn't know what was going to happen, you know. You're not privy to all that stuff. So when we got there, our ship could not go into Japan and dock because of the bombing. And we landed in Nagasaki. And then we had to go with our fuel pack and everything down a rope ladder onto the LCIs. And then they took us ashore with the LCIs. And once we got there, they got the trucks for us. And we went from there to a place called Fukuoka, Japan. That's on the southern island of Japan. And that's where I got assigned to the 32nd Division. And we stayed there for about 3 months with them.
What did you guys do there?
We were in the process of sending certain Japanese people that were involved in the war. I'm talking about high officers and stuff like this. And we were shipping them to Tokyo for the hearings and stuff like that there. So we did some of that with the Marines, and in the 32nd, after 3 months or so, they brought back the flag, and the 24th Division took over, and that's when I went in the 24th Division with the artillery. So I was involved in.
So how long did you spend in Nagasaki?
We didn't, no. there was nothing really there. It was just demolished. And we went from there to Fukuoka, Japan, where they had a temporary headquarters there. And we stayed there. And from there, I went into, with the 32nd Division, the Marines, shipping these prisoners to Tokyo, you know, I mean, helping them.
Right.
And then when that was all over with, the 32nd pulled out of there, and we stayed there. And then I went into what they call rehabilitation. And I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No.
Rehabilitation was where I was assigned with about three or four other soldiers and some Japanese police. And we went, whenever the ships came in from all over the places, they brought in Japanese prisoners and we processed them in this camp and all that, and took away their insignias and guns and whatever they had. And at that place, they also had a contingent of Koreans. They were going to be shipped back to Korea. And the Japanese were coming in and being shipped to wherever they're supposed to go.
Wow.
So I did that for quite a while. Then once that ceased, then I was back in my camp, and we just did guard duty and this and that, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that must have been a lot of Japanese coming in through there from that was being processed.
Yeah, from all these different islands and stuff like that. In fact, there were still shots being fired in the mountains in some of these islands because the Japanese had gone up there to hide. They didn't even know the war was over. So it was dangerous that way. But anyways, I never got hurt.
Well, that's good.
And,
so did they have you then guarding the prisoners, or were you actually processing them?
No, we didn't do that.
Okay.
We just shipped them to wherever they were going.
Okay, so they came
they
in.
They gave them food and they gave them money and took away all their insignias and everything else. And it was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long were you there?
For 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Were you there with the 32nd all this time?
No.
First, I know you were
there. When the 32nd, when they brought the colors back, 24th Division came in and they took over. And then we did a lot of this other stuff that I was telling you.
Okay.
Until I was discharged. But as is a consequence, there's a lot of people that were being sent back home. And there were openings available for different spots. And they put me in as I was a T4, and I was Mrs. Center's chief until I came home.
You said a T4. What is that exactly?
Technician 4,
okay.
Corporal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So
I was happy to get back home.
Yeah, right. Now, when you were there, did you get a leave or time off? And if you did, where did you go?
I did get some time off. And I found out that I had a friend that was in northern Japan, or central Japan, near Yokohama and all that. So we made a visit up there, and I hadn't seen him for a long time. He was a friend of ours from the Third Ward. So we spent some time with him. And
oh, that's kind of nice
to
see someone.
That was nice. So then I came home.
Now, when you were there, how did you get around? Did you have a vehicle, or did you go by train or bus to go from where you were up to north?
We went by train.
Okay.
Up there. And we traveled by jeeps,
right,
and that kind of stuff.
Now, were you given a weapon when you were there, or?
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of weapons did they have?
We had the pistols.
Okay.
You know.
It was a 45 or something, 45, right?
45, yeah.
Wow.
And all that. You had to be careful. You didn't want to walk around at night by yourself.
Oh, yeah, right.
Because there were a lot of incidents where they were beat up.
Right. The Japanese were still there.
Yeah, they were still angry and whatever.
Yeah, they were very angry, I imagine.
So you always traveled in pairs or stuff like this. I also had a friend that was with the military police.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a friend of mine. He's from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And he asked me to go with him because they're going to pick up stragglers and stuff like that there. So we'd go along the highway and pick them up and take them back to the camp. So, you know, a lot of things like going on like that.
Right. Yeah, I never. Yeah, because you would think they'd try to escape or, you know, get out of there. And so, yeah, I'm sure you had to keep an eye on all that.
Yeah.
What was going on. So, now you were there, and did you finally get orders to say, okay, you're going, you're being discharged and you're getting out?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And
I said, okay. They wanted me to join re-up.
Yeah.
And they wanted me to go into the airborne.
Oh.
And their airborne was in northern Japan. And I figured I had enough. I'm ready to go home. I'm single. You know what I mean? And I wanted to see the family and all that. So I finally got discharged and came home and then went around looking for work.
Right. So how did you get back? On a ship, too, again?
Yeah.
The ship? How long does it take to go from now? You're way out there in Japan. It
takes a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then you have to come. Where'd you work? California?
Yeah.
From Japan to California?
We went to California for discharge. And then we got our papers and we came home, you know.
So
it was an interesting experience.
Oh, I bet it is, you know, because, you know, you're processing all these people, you know,
yeah.
Did you make any real good friends when you were there with some of the guys?
We had people that were working in a camp that would come in and leave at night. They do a work around the
sure.
camp and stuff like that. And but I met some good friends.
Good.
And being an American, you know, when they bombed for Pearl Harbor and all that, you kind of were mad about that.
Yeah.
And you wanted to do something. But I can't see going over there, you get all this training to kill.
Right.
And then you go over there, you don't want to kill anybody if you don't have to. It's something you had to do.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you had a lot of training here in the United States before you went over.
Yes.
They moved you here and there.
Yes.
How was that training? Pretty good?
Yeah.
You know, at different military bases that you were assigned to. And stuff. So at least you got a chance to meet some people here. Did you make some friends that when you were here? I imagine you did.
Yeah.
Do you ever see them after you got out of the service? Did you ever run into them again? Or?
The only one that I managed to see is my wife was, she had a family, or friends up in Eau Claire. And this John Johnson, his father had a gas station there. and he used to work for him. I made it a point to go up there to see him. And he was happy to see me.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. I bet. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of nice to run into somebody after the service. And
so things turned out okay, you know.
Yeah.
Thank God.
So when you get back, now you got back home, you know, did everybody know you were coming, or was it a surprise for everybody when you showed up?
No, they knew I was coming home.
You let them know, hey.
They were waiting for me to come home. And I got home, everybody met me and everything else, and happy.
Okay. Now, did you have to take a train from California to Milwaukee?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, that's a long trip, too.
Yeah.
Was there a lot of servicemen on that train when you were coming?
Yeah, they were from all over.
Yeah, they were all going home.
A lot of them went to Fort Sheridan.
Oh, yeah.
And Fort Sheridan, you got to go home from there.
Right. So you got discharged as soon as you got back, you were done.
And that was okay.
So now you got home.
I went through a lot, but my brother Carlo, He really had it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did.
I'm surprised he came home.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. I was happy.
Oh, you betcha. You betcha when your brother comes home. Especially from a situation like that where he was. And, saw a lot of combat. So, now you get home. Now what happens? Now you get home.
Some friends are still here.
Mm-hmm.
Got together once in a while. I wasn't totally discharged, but
okay.
And then we started looking for work. And the first place we went to work was at some upholstery company making these chrome chairs and making the seats for them and all that kind of thing. I stayed with them for a little while. And then I didn't want to stay there forever. And one of my friends says, Tony, says they're hiring at the Internal Revenue Service. I said, yeah. He says, why don't you go down there? You could probably get a job. So I did go down there, and I got hired, and I was put in the accounting branch.
Really?
Yeah. And from there I started to work my way up different stairs, yeah.
So did you stay there then? At the
I retired from Internal Revenue Service.
Really?
Yeah.
How many years did you have there, remember? Quite a few, it sounds like, at that.
Yeah, I went in there. Must have gone in, I'm trying to recollect,
mm-hmm.
In 48, I must have gone in there.
Right.
I was still single. So. And,
but you're retired from there, and that's pretty good. Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. Now.
In fact, I was the only Spanish-speaking employee.
Really?
In that unit.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Back then.
And I was happy to get in there, and several times I was called to translate written material or translate for them when they're interviewing somebody.
Sure.
You know, our different outfits. We had the criminal investigation and an audit division and all those kind of stuff.
Okay.
So.
Now, the IRS building, was that downtown? Was that still downtown?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
So, wow, good for you. Good for you. That. Now, that is a federal job, right?
Yeah, it's a federal job.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah.
So, how did you meet your wife? I mean, how did that come about when you got out of the service?
Well, I knew my wife from school, from high school. But I really got to meet her and go with her after I got being discharged. And it was a coincidence that we were in a coffee shop that we all went to, and some friends and their girlfriends were there, and my wife was there, and I was there. And in a conversation, they were going to go on a hayride.
No.
And my wife and I were alone, you know. And they says, ask my wife, would you like to go on the hayride? She says, yeah, I would. And she says, why don't you ask Tony? Tony, you know. And from that time on, we were together.
Wow.
Yeah. I was married 63 years.
That's a long time, Tony. That's a long time. Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You hung in there. That's good. That's good. Yeah, here we are. You know, just out of coincidence, you run into a young lady, and one thing leads to another, and you get married, and you spend most of your life together.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
I have three lovely, my other son, Daryl, he lives in Madison with his wife, no children, but he's real handy with the computers and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, that's good.
And he does stuff up there. He never came back to live in Milwaukee. You know, he likes Madison.
Yeah, Madison's pretty nice.
And in fact, I go to football games or stuff like that. I go up with David, and we'll go by him and go to see the football games.
Okay.
And
that's pretty good. Yeah, sounds like everybody's doing really well and successful.
Yeah.
And so.
While I was in service, a flyer came from Washington, asking for people that might want to volunteer and go to a foreign country who can speak Spanish and are handy in their profession. Well, I was a revenue officer at that time, you know, top grade, and I put my name in. So a guy from Washington came to visit me.
What year was this? Remember? Was this after the service?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This is after I was back working here in the district.
In Colonel Road.
Yeah.
So what happened then?
Well, he interviewed me, and he was interested and so on and so forth. He says, I don't know whether they'll accept you or not. He says, we got an opening in Colombia. In Colombia. Yeah. Bogota, Colombia. And you know about all that stuff that's going on in Colombia and all that stuff. And I said, yeah, I says, I'd be interested. He said, I'll let you know what happens. They have to accept you, and the country would have to accept your family. You know, and at that time, Diane was only 2 years old. And David was in his senior year in high school here. And Darryl was in his sophomore year, I think it is. But anyways, I told the family at dinner that I had been accepted and that I'd be going to Columbia. And they says, well, that's okay. And David says, I don't care where I graduate from. He says, but that's a good idea. So David finishes his collegiate school in a school named Nueva Granada in Colombia. And then he came back here and went there for a year here at UWM. And then from there he transferred to Madison. And that's his second home. You know, Madtown. So he's up there. And we get up there and see my brother, or my son, the other son.
So what's your son's name again?
Daryl.
Daryl. And
Daryl and David. David. Yeah, David's the oldest. And Diane, she's a surprise.
Oh, really?
It's the best we ever had.
Cool.
She's got power of attorney for me. Because I can rely on her. You know what I mean?
You bet.
Even though she's still working. I don't know how many years she's got to go yet, but I didn't want to put that workload on her, but I didn't have much of a choice.
Now, you know, when you think back, Tony, about your military career, you know, what sticks out in your mind about that time? You have anything that, when you look back at
I was only 18 years old, 18, 19. And when you're that age and not married, you think you could conquer the world, you know.
Oh, yeah.
For me, it was like a new experience, which I thought in a positive way. See?
Yep.
So I figured I took take advantage of that. Now it's 2 years in Bogota, Colombia with my family. And they got a good training there.
Right.
And so far everything's been going fine.
Yes.
Except, you know, health wise.
Now how old are you now?
89. I'll be 90 in February.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're looking good. You're looking good.
That's what everybody tells me. You know, why am I visiting all these doctors and nurses and all that kind of stuff? But I guess it's part of life.
Now, did you have, bring back any souvenirs from Japan or on your travels?
Yeah.
Especially in the military?
Yes.
You know, that's...
I brought back quite a few. And then...
What kind of items did you bring back from your military? And
Flags. Samurai swords. A pistol holstered and all this kind of stuff. And I brought them all back as souvenirs, you know. And then later on I wanted to give them to my sons, you know, so that they could keep, but they weren't interested in that, you know. Mm-hmm. Now they look back and they said, So, then I noticed in the Japanese had advertising in the newspaper here that anybody that had brought back relics, souvenirs, they would like to see them and buy them back and take them back to Japan. So out of the buses as well. I've had them for several years, and nobody seems to be interested in them. And I have memories and stuff of this. I says, what good are they? You know, I says, I might as well have them look at it and buy them. And I made over $2,000.
So they did come. They came to your house and...
Yeah, well, they had opening at
was it a hall or a?
It was a hotel, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
And they rented the place, and people that were interested would bring the stuff over there, and they would look at it and tell us what they would give us for that. So I said, okay, and wound up, I got rid of most of the stuff. In fact, probably all the stuff.
Right, the samurai and the flags. And
yeah,
The pistol that you give away the pistol to, or I mean, sell it. I mean, they took it back and gave you money.
Yeah, they had a pistol that they used, holstered.
Well, I never heard that. I never knew that. That's interesting.
And I was able to ship those back from where I was without any interference. shipped them to my mother. Two cases. You know.
That's a lot of stuff. Good for you. For you. But yeah, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that Japan did that, but that's, I would imagine, they'd want their items back, you know, their flags, their pistols, swords, whatever.
To this day, I see that type of advertising in the paper.
Yeah, yeah.
There's probably a lot of people that have...
No, yes. Yeah.
Want to get rid of the stuff.
Online, yeah, people are selling them all the time.
Yeah.
So, well, Tony, thank you very much for the interview. It's quite interesting. There's some stuff I didn't know about.
Well, I'm
your
glad
service,
you,
and I'm glad I came.
I'm glad you were able to.
Yeah, well, we'll talk again, when we see each other in November.
Okay.